Do you know what's really interesting? I was reading an article recently, and it was around. So in Canary Wharf, there's all these like huge buildings, you know, like, and they're not bought out; they're rented. Yeah. You know, HSBC or whoever else is there, Credit Suisse. There's a bunch of these different, you know, banks and whatnot. These huge firms, and so they're saying because of COVID, more people were working from home, and now they're saying they're renting. They're spending all of this money on these buildings that no one's even using. And I'm so fascinated, but it sounds like such a simple thing, yeah. But I'm so fascinated because what are they going to do with those buildings now? Like, if no one's going to be renting them because people can work hybrid.
This is a lot of my work, actually. So I'm in architecture, and we do a lot of office building right now. During COVID, everyone's sending out messages that we're more productive than ever. But I think that was just a kind of front to try and convince clients that they weren't affected.
Yeah.
And now a lot of the big companies have said, actually, we were wrong. We definitely need to be back together. I've got other friends and companies who they feel like they can't tell everyone to come back in because people are used to the 3 days, 2 days, whatever it is. But in our industry especially, we need to be together. And we miss so much by not being in person.
Is that out of like being scared that they might lose the person in a way? So like,
yes.
Because it's interesting because my workplace, essentially, they started with like, okay, 3 days working from home, then it's like 2 days working from home. Now it's almost like I'm almost there all the time, just got 1 day working from home. So I think because it's like it's a lot of front-facing work and it's different, but I guess like just in general, like it's so interesting that people feel like, yeah, if you tell me that I need to work from the building, I'm out, yeah.
I think I was the same, you know. During COVID, I was, even COVID, I was still in the shop. I would still have to. Yeah. I still had to go into like
allegedly.
Games test.
Allegedly.
No.
It was legal.
Yeah, bro.
I'm just making sure. No.
I had to go and I had to games test, make sure that like these games are sort of good for when customers when we do come back out of lockdown. I had to make sure that the store itself was properly prepared.
Yeah.
Stuff looked nice. If we were to change anything, maybe bring in like new TVs, new aesthetics, stuff like that, to make sure that all of that stuff was there. Different things, but for the actual staff themselves, they were cool working from home, but it was like, yo, the shop's now opening again. Fortunately, it's that time. Everybody has to come back.
Yeah.
If you don't want to come back, we understand it. But we just can't keep paying you to work from home. Just doesn't make feasible sense for the company.
Yeah. Well, we're fully back in now. But one thing we did was we got a new office that we did up as really as well as possible to try and get everyone back.
Okay.
And then now with the people who join the company now, we say we're fully in with flexibility if you need to be at home. But a lot of our work right now is doing up offices to try and get people back. So a lot of offices were done 20 years ago and they're pretty sterile. And there's another thing where if a building doesn't have a good EPC rating, so environmental thermal qualities of rating B by 2028, you can't sign a new lease. And by 2030, you can't even keep tenants in. So all of the landlords in London are sitting on these old buildings. They're getting us to come refurbish them, but not just to improve them, to actually then make it attractive to get new tenants in. So actually, and then we've just finished a big building in West London. West End. And it's now already got 80% occupancy. And because we gave away. So instead of just filling an office with desks and things, we have these shared spaces. So say if you rent an office like this, you've got this, but then if you go out, you've also got all these desks you can just put a laptop on and sit at. You've got these phone booths, you've got a gym, like discounted cafes. You've got all these things that encourage you to be there. And, you know, you're giving away area that could have been rented space, but instead you've got a massive gym, you've got a yoga studio, you've got activities. It's like a student kind of vibe.
Well, I want to join up.
Professionals.
Yeah, that's
and,
sounds amazing.
They've got 80% occupancy already since July.
That's quite cool.
The idea is flexibility as well. So you rent a space like this, but if you grow, your guys can just sit on the desk over there in the shared space. So those kind of, that way of thinking that is kind of changing the workspace. HSBC is, they've left. They're talking of converting it to residential.
Those buildings being residential, that's what I was thinking. What would they do with it? Like, it's so wild.
They're huge.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I can see that. But then what else are they going to do with it? You know, like, I think that's probably one of the only options that they have.
No, sanity, I think that they could definitely use it for several different things. They can put in that one building alone, you can have your own like mall if you even wanted to. Just a different like couple stores on each floor. You can have an amusement center.
Yeah,
just a whole heap of like different activities on each floor. You can have, I don't know, even just a shared space. You can literally turn everything in there into a shared space and have different companies that wanted to work inside that building and rent it out. Loads of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Do you know what's interesting about the environmental thing? I was working on a funding bid maybe like 2 weeks ago, and one of the questions in there was like, and this is the first time I've seen it, how is your organization contributing towards net zero future plans? And it's like they're asking things around like the building. It's like, that was fascinating. So that makes sense now. So that you mentioned it now, I was like, okay, that's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are more switched on with it.
Yeah.
So there's a, I follow a lot of things that are against this, just to see, it's good to see what the opposing view is. And so, for example, someone put this interview up, and there was a guy in a debate saying, yes, we could do all this, yes, we could do that. Do you know how much the UK contributes to global emissions in the world?
Go on.
1%, less than 1%, which means that we can do everything we want. If we disappeared, it wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
And so then the question is, why are we, like, you know, there's, I'm caught in a dispute, not dispute, but a project right now where we're demolishing a really crap building. Like it's leaking energy, it's really poor quality, it's got bad ceiling heights, and we're looking, and it's in the west end of Oxford Street, where it's all the sweet shops, and looking to demolish it and build back a building twice the size with public spaces, public roof terraces, as well as offices. And they don't want to let us do it because we're demolishing the building. And then why, like, when there's other benefits? And so I've been asking this question to people, what's the point? Apparently, historically, even with all of our UK's emissions, historically, we're still less than 3%.
Wow, that is so, that's incredible.
And then the answer that a lot of people have is, well, we are, you know, as the developed nations, you know, you can't just look at the developing countries and say, well, you've got to do it this way now, because we've gone through that. So you've got to lead by example and also pioneer ideas, and then you can export that. And but then I saw this other discussion. There was Andrew Marr, you know, the political reporter.
Yeah, there might be a lot of names I don't know of. I usually have this I focus on like what's kind of in media, but I do look at things like, I guess I do look at life and things that's happening sometimes once in the blue moon. And
I'm a concepts brain, so I get big ideas and I don't necessarily remember the exact detail. But I just know this guy's name because he's, but he was interviewing someone, a Chinese diplomat or a foreign minister, and he was questioning the guy saying, is China a threat to the UK? And
They're not even worried about the UK.
It's so irrelevant.
They're like, can't even be a threat in the first place.
We're the top of this. England isn't.
He basically just shat on the whole of, excuse my French, but yeah, he just completely went for it.
I think what's interesting about UK, like, I always wondered how can country this size be so powerful, you know, compared to those other countries that are bigger than UK and they're less powerful and whatnot. But I think it's really interesting because I think one of the things that UK maybe had advantage of is prior to internet. So, you know, if they got certain knowledge, certain information that they can capitalize on, they had advantage of that. But now, because internet's become so accessible and people can just like learn things and access things, and I don't see why another country can't surpass that. And I'm like, actually, maybe in the future, most likely in the future, like, UK is not going to have that anymore at some point.
Yeah. So I was wondering this with sports, for example. What is it about the collective? Like, we've all got our individual characteristics, but somehow, like, you know, my family's not from here, but I grew up here. Somehow, we've all got this collective sense that Britain is superior. And I don't know I don't know what it is in our teaching or growing up that makes us think that. And especially, you see in football, like, if England football team or rugby team or whoever, they lose in the finals, everyone's like, we're pathetic. You know, no other country in the world thinks like that. But what is it in our education or in our growing up that made all of us? It's not just, say, the private schools. It's everyone. Like, you know, your average guy in the pub, he's like, we're shit. We should have won that. It's like, no, that's the World Cup final. And, you know, you get the players who are, like, taking off the medals. at the end, because, you know, that's not where we want to be. No, and every other country's like, that's ridiculous. You just come second in the world. You should be like proud of that. But what is it in our collective thing that made us think that we're the better country? I don't know.
What phone have you got?
Samsung.
Damn, you're one of those.
Yes.
What phone you got? What phone you got?
Well, actually, I've got a Samsung and a Google Pixel Pro.
14 Pro on iPhone. I also have an iPhone, actually.
What makes it Pro, though?
I don't know.
You paid for it. I don't
know.
You paid for it.
Yeah. But leading on to, from that point is that your phones are really good, both of yours. Extremely good.
Yeah.
Now, mine isn't. I don't know why I got this phone. I do actually, it was cheap, so I got it. But the marketing on Apple is crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have an Apple phone. I have the AirPods. I've got a MacBook Pro. Professional.
Yeah.
And I don't really need any of it. They just market it well.
Yeah.
They're really good with psychology. That's I think, what Britain has played on. Psychology. Throughout time, Britain has... they've ruled with psychology. And it's...
yeah. There's a lot to do with the kind of the intellectual way of, the way of thinking. So I used to work abroad in the Middle East.
Okay.
And I also have done work in like in other countries, like in Turkey and Portugal, and worked with lots of other people. And what's interesting is the way that we in different nations approach different problems. So for example, in the Middle East, I was doing this marina project. So I said to the team, let everyone come back in a day with some ideas. And this was the same in Portugal, actually. The Portuguese, when we came to the first presentation, they had these big printouts. They had digital images, like drawings, 3D visuals. Like it all looked like it was finished.
Come on,
but
my people,
the idea was crap.
Damn it.
And Portuguese.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was. But Middle East as well. So like,
yeah, there was crap. No, I'm just
it is what it
perhaps
is.
Too strong. But you know, for example, this Filipino colleague who had done like computer drawings and everything of this building, but it was the shape of it was a fish cut in half. So the idea was like very literal. And then the British teams and all in both these projects, all we had on the first day when everyone else had these computer drawings were just hand scribbles. But the concept was there, and the idea was there. So there's a like, and that's how I describe our work in my company is, you get a lot of buildings that look excellent, like the finish, the detail, but actually something doesn't quite feel right, and the whole big move isn't there. And we've always been good at the big move, and then as we've evolved as a company, we've now got to do the finish too. So now our projects look good, but also they've got a key thing that unlocks it. And it's just a way of approaching a problem that's different. And my brother was studying in China for his degree. He was doing Mandarin economics. And, you know, like they say that in China, generally, the maths is very good. What he found was the teaching there is very literal. So, for example, they get taught a problem in maths and the exam is that question. But if they change the question around, they can't do it. They can't apply it to something else. I mean, it's a very broad statement, but you know, the general idea was that they knew this, the exact detail, very complicated detail, but didn't know how to change it. You've done an IQ test?
I haven't. I want to do one. I haven't.
It's the same thing. So an IQ test, they ask these questions, and if you simply change some of the words, you get it. And it's all about applying. But the thing is, if you've done one IQ test, the next time you'll get a better score if you know how to do it.
Okay.
Because like, if you change the name, like they have confusing words in it. If you change the name to something simpler, it's really easy for some of the questions. It's all about how you apply the concept.
You heard it here first, ladies and gents. IQ hack. Yeah, change the words.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know what I get in my IQ test, probably mine or something.
Whoa. Whoa.
I know, my brain just works different. Yeah.
What?
Whose phone was it?
No, that was my phone. That was my phone. But yeah.
Well, they say IQ now, they consider it as less important as EQ.
Yeah. My IQ is through the roof. My IQ, I don't know. I'm not too sure. But you know what? There is this like, I guess there's this like distinction between, so some people are more like feelers or like just they just like doing things, and, and there's the, you know, the intellectuals, and some people are in between. They bounce in between one or the other, and I think it's interesting because like an intellectual can sit there all day thinking about how to solve something, where the person that's just more like, you know, the EQ's higher or whatever, they're just out there trying to do it. By it's an interesting thing. I find it fascinating, and I come across, I think now because I can distinguish between different people, I come across all types of people who've got combinations of both, and I'm just like, I recognize it. I think recognizing that is important.
Yeah, big facts. Big facts. And I believe you need both in your team, man. Because most definitely you need both in your team, man, because sometimes you might approach it one way and the feelers will now come and just spin your brain, and you're like, damn, I didn't even think of it like that, man. Yeah. Come on, man.
But then at the same time, further down the line, you need the other people for the detail or the kind of for the nitty gritty bit. Have you done the personality test?
I've done that. I don't 16 Myers-Briggs personality. Yeah, I've done that. I've actually got the same results, like I think 3 years in a row.
Really?
But then I stopped doing it. So I think for me, it's an interesting thing. I had to like reprogram myself. I've been on this journey of like, I think I used to label, I'm an introvert.
Yeah,
I'm this, I'm that, I've got this person. I've actually dropped all of that. And it's so interesting because I've really dropped it. I wasn't just saying I dropped it, I've really dropped it. And I think my life has changed since. Like I can be an introvert, I can be an extrovert, I can do this, I can do that. And
situations,
Things just opened up for me. And I think before that it was actually like labelling myself as this or that. It was quite limiting because I was believing that this is what it is based on what someone else's reality created or perception was about certain things.
Well, I think as well, the layer that's missing is the circumstance. So you could be one personality type when you're calm and in a good position. Under stress, you completely change. And so it's actually be good to see the different personality types under duress.
Things do change, right?
Yeah. Like if you're stressed, does your personality type change completely? Are you're less of a feeler? You're suddenly more of a, you know, are you more dictatorial? Like you more especially with leadership or management.
It's kind of similar to like you know they say like whenever you have a real life situation, then you see who your friends are.
Yeah.
Because you know, like if something is really serious, then you see how your friends respond. They change completely sometimes because of.
Well, that's where guys and girls are different as well. And like people don't like to say it anymore, but there is a difference with guys and girls and how...
Well, scientifically, they say there's different different amounts of white and grey matter.
Right.
From, you know, so from science point of view, already, like, by those measurements, we're really different innately. So it's you know...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when something happens, like, I think girl groups are probably more supportive in that way than guys naturally. But at the same time, guys... will have it in them to pull through when you need to.
We're breaking those stereotypes. Like,
facts. Yeah. I think my the groups of friends that I have, I think the ladies will tend to console the fact, whereas the guys are like, all right, but how are we gonna get through it?
Yeah,
how are we gonna do it? Both are appreciated.
Yeah,
because sometimes you do just wanna.
That's where, say, for example, with my wife and I. I've got a problem-solving brain, so if she comes to me with something, I have to stop myself from trying to solve it because sometimes she doesn't want that. She just wants me to listen.
Just wants to listen,
and acknowledge it and say, God, that must be terrible.
I don't understand.
But instead, I'm like, why don't you try this? And she's like, that's not what she wants.
Have you read a book called The Way of a Superior Man? It talks about it. It's actually it really connects to that really well. I think for me, what's missing in the world, and then there's a lot of, like, for example, social media, like, you know, obviously you might not notice, I don't know, you know, different algorithms and everything else. There's a lot of like men versus women happening at the moment. And I'm getting tired of it. I think what's missing is recognizing that we're different. Because the moment I go, actually, I might not fully agree with someone's being, but I understand that they're being different, or actually agree is probably not the right term, but I understand that they're being different, and once I understand how they behave or what their kind of like innate behavior is, then it changes everything for me. Like, so for example, I'll give an example. So when I read that book, so I was actually dating someone at that time, and what's happened in that book, it was mentioned saying that sometimes like women will make, for example, some women will make decisions based on emotions at that time, but it doesn't mean that that's the final decision, right? So what's happened, I remember I asked, because basically my ex, because I was on the best times at that time anyway, so I was kind of like, I was saying, look, do you want to meet up on Friday? So she said, she's like, nah, like, I don't want to see you on Friday, this, that, whatever. But because I read that book at that time, and that's what the book spoke about, it said that don't take that as a final answer, because she made that decision based on that emotional state at that time. She might change that tomorrow, basically. So I could have easily been, you know, we could have started maybe arguing something or whatever. But because I understood that concept, I then chilled for a bit. I said, cool. And then the next day she messaged me, she said, you know what, changed my mind. Let's meet up on Friday. So I was like, wow. And just understanding those kind of things and how someone functions, and, you know, they function different to how men function. I was like, actually, that's a big thing. And it's not like I need to know this so I can like play the game or whatever. It's more about, let me understand you so I can actually navigate and be how you are and, you know, be with you. So
there's a cultural thing there too with I read this article about how British partners with German partners, they really struggle. And the most basic thing is at the point at which you say thank you, Germans, like, if you, like, for example, you got me a coffee, Germans wouldn't say thank you for that. They feel like when you say thank you, it has to be for something meaningful. So that's just something like, yeah, you got me a coffee, whatever. Whereas for us, that's quite rude to not say thank you.
Germans start shouting, kartoffel, you know what I'm saying?
No manners. No manners. Where are your manners?
Kartoffel. That's what, nah, I like that too, yeah.
What? Is it?
German language is so strong though.
Yeah.
Such a strong language. Yeah.
You ever read a book called Through the Language Lens, or Through the Language Glass? And it was about whether language affects your perception on the world. Really good. Historically, they used to, they kind of went away. So it's nature versus nurture. So if nature is, you'll never have the same word in any language for lion as you will for tree. That's pointless. But then nurture is where, where something culturally is adapted. So they went off the idea of nurture. They thought it's purely nature for a long time because they got something really wrong, which was in all historic books, no one ever described the color blue. Like when they talk about the sea or the sky, they had different ways of describing it that was basically like brown. Or something. So they used to think that maybe humans couldn't see the color blue for a long time. And then I can't remember what happened, but they basically realized that's completely not true. And that threw 100 years of intellectual thinking out the window. So then they went away from that. And only recently they've started coming back to the idea that there is nurture in language too. So in Japan, traffic lights look blue. And that's because in Japan, the direct translation for the word green, they've got like 20 different types of blue. And when you put them all out there, we can't tell the difference between most of them. But they can straight away because they think it's because they've got a word for it, so their brain is wired to that.
Yeah,
that's a really basic one. And then it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. The examples in this book, and I'll jump straight to the best bit at the end. Don't want to ruin the book.
No, please do.
But they found these Aboriginal tribes, for example, where instead of saying, "Say for me, my cup is in my left hand and yours is in your right hand," for example. In their culture, this would be the northwest, that would be the southeast. And everything they do is related to north, south, east, west.
Oh, wow.
And when the Brits discovered them, they thought they were just taking the piss. So they would do things like spin them around. They would do tests to see whether they were just mocking them or whether it was real. Or, for example, you know, they'd go in this room and then over there's a room identical. And they say, right, put these two things over there in the same room. We would put this on that sofa, that on that chair in the same way. They would do it the other way around because it's north, it's opposite sides.
That is fascinating.
And, you know, there's this guy telling a story of how he capsized over the boat, and it was on film, and he explained how he went over that way. And then 10 years later, he managed to catch the guy saying the same story, except because he was facing this other way, his hand gestures and everything went the other way. And so at what point did we... And then the question is, what's natural? What's nature and nurture? So their children at age 3, 4 will naturally use north, south, east, west. In our ones, our children, unless you force them, don't want to use left and right until they're about 8 or 9.
Because some of them can't even tell the difference between left and right.
Some adults still get it wrong. So maybe that's nurture, where naturally we know north, south, east, west, and we've nurtured ourselves not to somehow. But yeah.
And essentially, like in a different world, what if North was South, and you know, what if all of that was mixed up?
Well, they got really thrown when they got flown to the UK because they're from south of the equator, and they the sun's gone.
Yeah. That's interesting. There's another thing that they talk about, which is around so like if someone can speak two different languages. So let's say, for example, I have a problem at work they need to fix. And if I start thinking in a different language around a problem, it'll create different results on how I'm going to fix it. Because the language is different. So it just shows how language can actually shape our realities. And I truly believe that. I think, and do you know what's really fascinating? I might not be able to articulate this well, but something that's been on my mind lately a lot, is, so language to me is a tool to describe what's happening. And but the thing is, the tool is limited, right? So I think language can't describe. So I break down as emotion, as energy in motion. So you can't break down certain energy because certain things are just intuitive and we pick those up. And I don't think there is a tool that can do that, that can describe those particular things. And then, you know, for example, let's talk about like ancient Egypt. You know, I don't know the whole thing of like what's happening and all these other different things. And someone I hold there to me that he was talking about 26,000 year cycle. I didn't know that was a thing until I looked into it. That's apparently like another theory of that things go in different cycles. And so global warming might not even be to do with any of the emissions and all of that stuff.
So it's just part of the cycle?
According to that cycle, the equinox and everything else, then that's just a natural thing that would happen in this planet. So for instance, things that are frozen now could have been unfrozen years ago. And you know, like the plates move of the earth and some you know, some land, you know, it will emerge, some things would submerge. And like this could be all frozen in, I don't know, like 5,000, 7,000 years or something.
Yeah, it could be. It's just the data shows that we have affected it and accelerated it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was actually the car companies the oil companies noticed it first in the 80s. So the oil companies noticed it and they've got all the data and they got a report saying, oh shit, we're affecting the world. Let's not tell anyone that.
Did you know that I'll put this up because I don't want to spread misinformation. Did you know, I think it was General Motors that created the first electric car, and it was in 19 something. You know what happened? They scrapped it. Like they recalled all the cars because I don't want to spread misinformation, but apparently they created this false group around oil companies where they were, you know, going on marches and things. Yeah. And it's all fascinating. Like there's so many fascinating things in this world.
Yeah.
Apparently so. Are you mic'd up, by the way? No. If you're mic'd up.
So I read as well, like with the Egyptians, they, even in old Egyptian cultures, they didn't know who built the pyramids. But when the Brits first discovered the pyramids, they're like, ah, it's the Egyptians. And that just spread, that just stuck. But the Egyptians themselves have no idea who built the pyramids.
Yeah. So the thing is, what if in those times they've had another tool that was in language, or maybe a different type of language that's helped them excel beyond what we have? Like, and that's the thing I'm playing around with. I can't really articulate that because for me to articulate that, I'd need to know what that language was or what that way of living was, because I'm currently limited to this tool that I have now. So if I'm working with what I know, it's hard for me to understand what I don't know yet, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But it's the car I was talking about, 1996 till 1999, that was the production. Everyone was loving it. People were saying, yeah, I'm saving so much more money on everything else. And they recorded it. They scrapped all of them. They literally, whoever bought them, they went to the house, they said, we need to take it back, and scrapped all of them.
What were they running on? Just electric?
Electric, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's because of I think the oil companies were making, you know, a lot of money and everything else.
Yeah,
and that's another thing. I think during COVID, I can't remember what the profits were, but the profits skyrocketed. I think during COVID, for petrol companies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They made a lot of money during COVID. Yeah.
Because everybody was going around incognito, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, but the world is a fascinating place. Do you ever think about, like, just, I don't know, just the experience of life, or like just what does it mean? Like, do you ever think about the I guess the deeper side of life?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that you kind of go through life from when you're a teenager, especially, and until you figure out where you want to put your flag, what matters to you. And you know, some people from my school, for example, There were some guys who were like really popular at school, and then that was it. So when we left school, they stayed in that town and they put their flag down there. And then there were, and then people, a lot of others will then go out of their town, like go travel the world, go to university, and then keep going until you figure out where to put your flag down. And yeah, and a lot of people put it down earlier, put it down later. I'm kind of halfway, I guess. I've got like you the way you described yourself in your message was, you know, you love life and you love the world, and I feel like that was me too. But at the same time, I'm kind of not burdened, but you know, I've now got responsibilities, I've got kids, I've got family, and right now the world's very different to how it was when our parents were around. You know, the money has suddenly become so vital when it wasn't. In like the 80s and 90s, our parents could buy a house for like 30, 40 grand, 50 grand kind of thing. And it was, and relative to the salary, that was affordable, and now it's not. So it's a shame, because I feel like if we now had grown up in that time, we'd be so much happier. And yeah, so on the one hand, I've put my flag down with my family and like my kids, and that's changed. Like, it's just, do you have kids?
No, not yet. I do, but they're not born yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have kids.
Yeah. You see it when, like, sometimes, like people just kind of, they have kids and whatever, and you see others where it's just, you can see a profound change in them. And I feel like I and my wife and I had that.
Profound,
yeah. And so on the one hand, that's where I've put my stick down. But on the other hand, I still feel like there's so much more world out there. And I feel conflicted, because I want to take my family, go live abroad, experience. I lived abroad for a little bit. And like, it's a really good learner for anyone to experience, good perspective. But on the other hand, I've got a good job, stability. I need to provide for the family. So instead, I'm sticking, and that pains me a little bit. But yeah,
do you know what helps, or what could help? I think because you said the phrase of like, there's so much more world out there.
Yeah.
I think there's so much more world in there, and because the thing is, there's this like illusion of like, people think that when they go out there, they think they're discovering the world, but actually truly they're discovering themselves.
Yeah.
And it goes with that thing of like, the more I know about the world, the more I know about myself.
Yeah.
The more I know about myself, the more I know about the world. They're not two separate things.
Yeah, I like that.
It's the same thing.
I think it's a really good thing. If everyone can, they should travel. Like, living abroad was really good perspective for me, because I was living in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Where have you been there?
I'm going there.
I like your story about the cabs, like the taxis, they would assume or judge.
Yes, that's right.
So
what this was, because out there in Dubai, I think it was 2007, and a lot of those countries are very passport based.
Okay.
So, you know, at the very bottom you have Bangladeshi, Pakistani, like physical labor. And then above that in tiers, it's a lot of Filipino, because they often have university degrees, but it's also cheap. So then all the shops, all the restaurants, offices, a lot of administrative staff is Filipino. And then above that, you start then getting into kind of European, American, British, and then above that is Emirati. And for me, I was very privileged position, because I was British passport out there. But then people would look at me as if I'm Filipino. So, for example, I wouldn't get into bars unless I was with my kind of expat versus immigrant. It's a funny term, isn't it? But expat friends, like basically Europeans or Americans. Otherwise, they'd like, well, you're Filipino, you're not going to come in here because you're not spending any money. And taxis, which were generally Indian, Bangladeshi, Pakistani, wouldn't pick me up because they thought I'm Filipino, so I'm not going very far. And on the one hand, that was really annoying. But on the other hand, I was, you've heard this bit, I guess, but I was living in a 3-bed flat with some Serbian friends. And we had a lovely flat. We also had a pool in the building. And then, because that was just normal there.
Okay. Mm.
And then I went to my Filipino colleague's leaving do. Similar thing, 3-bed flat, except in the living room, it's full of bunk beds. And then her room was a bunk bed with a double bed on the bottom, single on the top. Mm. On the top was someone else. On the bottom was her, her husband, and her husband's sister. So the perspective suddenly was like, yeah, it's annoying for me that this taxi's not stopping, but actually I'm, you know, in a, living abroad, got a good job, and you know, they're there having to work their lives, arses off for a small, much smaller salary than I'm on because they're from a country. And, you know, it's just luck or odds that I was, you know, we were born here and not born in a country that has a lot more difficulty.
That's crazy. Judge straight up on the passport. That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't think that's luck. I think a lot of it's got to do with your parents as well. So it's not luck, you know. It's been. I think obviously it's unfortunate if someone is in a worse position than someone else in life. But I think the reason I love that story is because it's a reminder of like how important perspective is.
Yeah.
Because you just sat back and you looked at things in a particular way. And you use gratitude. You said, you know, I'm actually grateful because I'm in this position, even though it seems like you're going for a negative experience. But actually, gratitude is always the answer. And perspective is important. It's like, what angle are you looking at things from, really? So,
and also, it changed the way that I took questions. Say, for example, when my dad came to visit and someone said, oh, where are you from? Because he came from Burma when he was 10 to UK. Mm. When he got asked that question in London, it was generally with it was a loaded question. It was a bit of aggression, a bit of foreign attitude. No. And when he got asked it there, he was a bit affronted. And I said, no, our family's from Burma and so on. And people are genuinely interested.
Mm.
And similar with things like racism or anything like that, I now have a difference in how I take it depending on the intent. Because sometimes it's just a bit of ignorance and a bit of naivety. And the intent isn't ever bad.
Yeah. I think most of it is ignorance a lot of the time.
And a lot of the stuff you see now where like, people get cancelled for saying something stupid, actually, I think the problem with race a lot of the time is people now feel like they can't have good debates because they've lost the vocabulary or the ability to debate properly. And so then people are scared of debating.
Do you know what I think? I think it's that too. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think there's this big thing on people not taking responsibility for how they feel about things.
Mm.
Because that's what cancel culture is literally thriving off. It's like someone would hear something and people that don't want to feel responsible for how they understand it, because controversial things are very important as well. Like, it's important to have controversial opinions.
Yeah.
But the moment something's controversial and they start feeling a type of way about it, they can't process it, no responsibility for how they feel about it, they say, yeah, cancel that person, don't want to hear that again. And within human nature, I used to look for the easy way out or like the easy pathway. But I realize in life, for anything, you know, this is a cliche thing, everyone talks about this, but to actually achieve anything or get somewhere, it's not about taking the easy way out.
Yeah.
So for people that cancel people, if they want to grow and develop as individuals, they should not cancel people. They should hear them out and have that debate or have that conversation. And like, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
They might feel sad about it, but then look how much growth it is on, how much growth there is on the other side.
And that's the thing with the cancelling thing as well, where they look back at people's history from what they said 10, 15 years ago, and then it doesn't give anyone the ability to grow or to evolve.
And that's one thing with humans, man. We grow, we evolve, we change, man. Even literally, you just said it earlier when you're speaking on your personality and how, obviously in the past, your personality was one thing. And now you've grown, you've evolved into a much brighter, wiser, stronger human being. You understand that you've stepped into a different shoe. You're a different person now. You're a little human being at that. And it's one thing that happens to us as humans, man. And I think people, we all have friends from the past.
Yeah.
We all have that group of friends that we're still quite close to, or maybe one or two friends here and there. And as long as they've understood who you were and understand who you are, and they're not happy to treat the you of now as the you that was, then I think the relationship will always grow and thrive. But me personally, yeah.
Yeah. How old are you guys?
28.
I'm 16. So now I'm 32.
I'd say 28 is peak social as for men.
Peak, sorry?
Peak social life.
Brother, Do you know?
Because yeah. that's when you kind of figured out most, like, the direction of who you are. And then so you start having more genuine, like, you hang out with people who you want to hang out with, as opposed to compromising as much just to be with a certain group or whatever.
Yeah, and knowing who you are is a very important aspect. I wish there could be, I say this all the time. Well, I don't say this all the time. That's a lie. I just lied. But I say it sometimes. And I wish schools had something around who are we as individuals. Because, like, when I look at young people, they finish school, know nothing about who they are. They go to college, nothing about who they are. They go to uni, nothing about who they are. I think after they finish uni and start working, they slowly start figuring out about who they are a little bit more. And that is probably around from 25 to kind of like 28 to 30. And it's really sad because everything is just kind of like based on like, learn this so you can do this.
Yeah.
But not let's explore this so you know who you are. Yeah. And that will help you do that even better. But yeah, it's there was a little bit upside down, but I don't know if it's by intention, if there's like, you know, systems or whatever, you know, there's a lot of different conspiracy theories, or out of ignorance because people are so stuck in doing things in how it's been done or the pattern that it's been done in. So it's an interesting thing.
I definitely believe that there's intention behind it.
Mm.
I definitely believe that. The
school system was to create good workers.
Yeah, and literally that's what it does. Mm. You literally just said it yourself. You'd go to school after school, you do college or uni, and then after uni, you then come out, you get a job, usually in a similar field to what you've done. To be fair, actually, I say that some people went to uni, studied one thing and got a job that's completely different.
I lived through two waves of kind of bursts of technology where if you had any idea, you could have made money. But instead, I was so focused on architecture that I missed them. So the first was just websites. Ooh. When I was at university, a guy in Manchester made a website, which was just, when you went on it, it was a picture.
Mm.
But when you zoomed in, every pixel was actually an advert, a billboard.
Mm.
And he made millions. No one's heard of it because now it's pointless having to zoom in to find a billboard. But at the time, the idea was amazing. And I got another friend who, she made a website where all you did was type in your area and say you want to do bathrooms. And then it put you in touch with a tiler, a grouter in your area. And she, someone bought the website when she finished uni and she bought loads of flats in London with it. You had any idea you made money. It was now you've got to really think about the idea and it's got to be really solid to make money. Then the second was phone apps. And again, people had crappiest idea possible and made money off it. And I missed both of those waves by thinking career. Because I was set in the way of our parents' thinking. But I've been mentoring recently in some schools, and the thing that really shocks me is these teenagers, like 14, 15, 16-year-olds, they don't know how to talk to adults.
Oh, my days. Big facts.
Yeah.
In what sense?
They won't make eye contact. They won't, like, acknowledge. Like, you have to really work hard to just, like, eye contact. I guess it's a self-esteem thing or what. What I was thinking, you heard of it's called the Pygmalion effect. And especially in children, Pygmalion was Eliza Doolittle. So it's the idea is that they did do loads of tests with teachers and young children, like say 6, 7, 8-year-olds. And they tell them at the beginning of the year, by the way, these three kids are super smart. Keep an eye out on them. And all five kids or however many. And every single time at the end of the year, those kids who were completely plucked at random, some of them were actually really low IQs, they all did better.
Is it?
And so children or people respond to how you expect them to, or if you treat them differently. So it's a teacher, and it's subtle. It's not like they suddenly treated them completely differently, but it was subtle. If they were misbehaving, but you thought they're going to be a superstar, you kind of give them a bit of benefit of doubt. Was it? You know that kid's a little shit. You're like always on them for causing trouble, but if that person they've said, oh, he's going to be a genius one day, like, oh, or she's going to be a genius one day, you're like, oh, she's doing that because she's got that creative brain and she's just pushing boundaries. You know, you have different allowances, but something about it affects the way that the children respond. And I was talking to Jacob about this last time because we both went to private schools, and I was trying to work out what it was, because the teaching itself isn't necessarily loads better, but something about those schools, the people coming out of them are very different. And it's not just it's simple. Like, you know, the kind of cancelling thing is simple. The easy answer to ask because they got money. But actually, you know, my family, they wasn't a particularly wealthy family, but my dad did well and well enough to send my brother and I to these schools. But thinking back now and having worked in these other mentoring schools, a big part of it was the interactions with adults.
Mm.
In a lot of schools, I think it's just you have the classroom and then out, as soon as the bell goes, you're out in the hallway mm-hmm. and it's chaos. In our ones, you also had lunch with the teachers. You had interactions that
Pardon?
Weren't... Yeah, we like you go like in the lunch hall. The teachers sit with us. You're in set tables. Mm. You had conversations that weren't just them teaching you, mm. and they treated us like adults in the way that they talked to us.
And the relationship becomes stronger as well. That means if the relationship's better, then they're more likely to engage with what they're learning too in classes.
And there was still a bit more respect as well. Like, say, if an adult walked into any classroom, all the kids would stop talking and stand up. That was just like a basic.
Oh, yeah, we did that as well.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did that.
Actually, these schools don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was so fascinating for me to hear about the schools because, and I think one of the other things you said around schools as well in that conversation with Jacob was around, it's got like a really negative, connotation and how people feel about it. And I actually get that, that made me reflect on it. I started thinking about it a bit more, but I was thinking about my school and I was thinking, I moved there, I'm Lithuanian originally. I moved there when I was 12 and I started school a bit later, so I didn't get into school straight away. But when I moved there, the first day in school, I got in a fight. 3 days later, there was a guy in my class, I'm not going to say his name, but he was basically on the phone saying, I'm going to stab you up after school to someone.
You?
No, not me, someone else.
Oh.
Yeah. And then it's so crazy because our school was, like when school used to finish, there's some people from our school that would do robberies or this or whatever. They'll be elders. So imagine like we're 15 and there's like 20-year-olds coming looking for people that are 15-year-old because they've done something to like someone that's 20. And it was wild. Like when I look back on it, like personally, obviously, and I think whether I went to private school or, you know, public school, whatever, like it doesn't really matter. Like I would've went to school and maybe had a different experience and whatever. But when I think about it, like, I'd probably choose the public school. I don't think I'd want to go to private school because the experiences I've had there, it's like, I can't get it anywhere else.
Mm.
And obviously, vice versa, like, if I went to private school, there'd be certain experience I can't get elsewhere either. But it's so interesting because I've been exploring that kind of side of, like, what's the beauty of poverty or growing up in adverse situations? And, like, because there's a lot of, like, untouched understanding of how important that is as well, if obviously unpacked correctly and dealt with and all these other different things.
Yeah.
From an external point of view, I hear the two story, the two sides of private versus public.
Mm.
Personally, I went to a public school. My school, crazy. Mm. Crackheadery all over the square. Yeah. It just is what it is. But the school was very stern. They were very strict and they taught you some quite straightforward morals.
Yeah.
You couldn't chat anyhow to the teacher. Our teachers always referred to as sir or miss. And having lunch probably isn't something I'd want to do with my teachers because that's sort of supposed to be my me time.
Yeah.
But I still like the concept because just as an option, like in school, you don't even think teachers eat. That's not something that.
Else,
yeah, that's just one of those things. You see them in the classroom; they teach. If you see them in the hallway, you say, "Yo, miss," or "Yo, sir," and then keep it moving.
Mm.
But that, as a thought, you would sit down, you start to soak up exactly what this person is telling you because you see that, although they're teaching you this subject, this person is still a human being outside of it.
Yeah.
They have actual life experience. Mm. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Nowadays, you have teachers that are maybe 2-3 years older than the youths.
Yeah.
The teachers are just looking at them like, yo, and the youths are just looking at them like, what?
Hmm?
Can I help you? Or
yeah.
It's mad, man. Like, some teachers that I know about who like tell me about the stories that go on in schools, they're like students can't actually communicate with the teachers properly. Yeah. Like they'll be having a conversation and obviously, you know, you use words like please, thank you.
Yeah.
You say, oh, like, can I have this? Can I have that? And at the moment, it's just a whole load of, yo, let me get that. Yo, beg you pass that. Can you? So it's this cutoff is soon going to, I just want to know how these guys are going to grow up.
Yeah.
I just want to know how it's going to grow up, because I can already foresee the problem.
Mm. Yeah, it was, so I did one group of still 13-year-olds, 13, 14-year-olds, and at the beginning went around the room asking everyone for their name and what they want to do when they're older, and some of them just could barely even say their name, but some of them were so disinterested because they were convinced they were going to be football stars. And there's a lot of stuff about that where you've seen these articles of kids who are from the age 9, they're in an academy for Man United and playing with Stevie Gerrard.
Mm.
And then at 19, they get ditched by text message and that's it. They've been focused on football and being celebrities the whole time. That they don't have a backup plan. And three of the kids in this class were like, football. And I said, have you got anything else like that you're interested in? Nah, I'm football.
Mm.
And they were so disinterested in anything I had to say because they're going to be football stars. And chances are
they probably won't be. That's the thing. Statistically, someone is actually more likely to become like some rocket engineer or something or whatever, rather than a footballer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, statistically, yeah. They have more possibility of becoming some kind of rocket engineer than a footballer.
But even that, like, cool, I get it. Aim for the stars. Do you get it? Sometimes aim for the stars.
Yeah, rocket engineer, aim for the stars.
you wanna go quite far in your career, you wanna take it to the max, I get it. You are looking to become a footballer, I get it. But just understand that if you slip and you break your leg one day, or you slip and you injure your foot, a minute fracture in your knee, anything can happen. There's so many things that can happen to you in this life. Have a backup plan. Understand what you're going to do just in case this flops. If this flops, I mean, it's probably not going to flop, you get me? Because I got it, you know what I'm saying? But if it does, I guess I could go to this. Do you get it? It's understanding just life, man. Come on.
So then the other layer to that is in countries where you have the subcultures, where you have, say, like in where I was in Dubai or Singapore or a place like that, where there's a whole city that's run on immigrant workers. And again, that whole expat immigrant thing. So expats, when you think of expats, you think of Brits or Americans abroad.
Well, immigrant literally stands for I'm migrant. That's
right, okay.
Yeah. I'm migrant, so that's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, technically, everyone's working abroad as an immigrant.
But then also, so just enough, I'll let you finish your point, but in a way, like, who migrated from where? Like, it's just, are people really migrating? They migrate in the concept of countries, right? So they're navigating a concept that's been put by someone else that isn't there. So they're not really migrants. They're just, anyway, that's a whole different conversation, but yeah.
What was the thing was, that same question around the classroom in these countries where you've got, say, an underclass. I don't know what the right word is, but a sub-people.
Subclass. That's what sub is.
Subclass. Such a sad.
Subhumans.
Yeah.
That's just given like Futurama, bad. Yeah.
But then they ask the kids around the room, and some of them from the immigrant countries, they were like, McDonald's. And these are like 12-year-olds. What are you going to be in the order? I don't know. I'll probably be working at McDonald's. Because they already had a sense that they were sub. And that's sad.
Yeah. Conditioning.
Yeah.
It is, man. One thing I would say, though, in terms of looking at the brighter side on things, is that outside of the UK, countries that speak English speak better English than the children in the UK. It's crazy. If you go to Nigeria, and you these lot will bring you a brand new English that you haven't even got concept of, because these are new words that are technically still in the dictionary, and the sentences are making sense, but it's just a whole load of words sandwiched together that make such phenomenal sense. Man, these times you have children that will come up to you like, "All right, bruv, it's good, innit?"
Yeah, bruv. Innit? Yeah, bruv. I like that one, bruv. Not gonna lie to you. You know what? See that one there? But you know what? I like it too, you know.
Man.
I like it too. But you know, that's the thing, and I think that's the beauty of the world, right? Like, there's this stupid standard. I'm not saying people shouldn't learn how to code switch and be able to talk in a different way. I think that's an important skill. But there's this stupid thing of like someone goes, our way of speaking is better than yours. I think that's what I have a problem with. And people say this is the correct way and what you're doing is incorrect. Mm. Because actually, if anything, people that are saying that, they're the kind of like, I don't want to call them idiots, but they're the ignorant ones, because what they're not seeing is that they're following the condition that they've had.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I'm not saying we can't be better, we can't learn things. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, look, sometimes people are ignorant, and it's about recognizing actually there is a conditioning that we all like received from the society. And it's just about understanding what those are. But speaking of, like, because you spoke about language, do you both know what... I had this, like, fascinating moment, like, 2 weeks ago when I learned the word substance, because you spoke about sub. Like, substance is an interesting word. Because you've got sub.
Stance.
Yeah, substance. And the sub obviously is underneath, something that's underneath. Some people, do you have substance? So it's like, what is just, what's the underneath of where you stand? Like, yeah. It's a beautiful thing. When you start breaking words down, it's just, substance is a nice word.
You do that quite a lot. Yeah. You break down words. Man said, I will show you English, bro.
But that's not even English. That's more like linguistics and just, you know, that's, I wouldn't, that's how things are structured. And I find it fascinating. For example, even universe, it's got a Latin origins, unus, and I think it's unus verse, but unus is just one, it means one, isn't it? Mm. It's one, and I think the other part is humanity, so like one humanity or whatever, or one verse, or how you want to put it. So it's not like, these words are not by accident, it's just, it's about understanding the origins and why they were created in a certain way as well. But yeah, we didn't get to ask you, Johnny. Would you like to introduce yourself?
That's what I was literally just about to say, you know.
Have we started?
I was waiting for the right time.
So we're just starting now. This is.
I was waiting for the right time. Yeah, I was like, are we going to introduce Johnny over here?
Do you know what? I think for the audience, I think we've been, well, I'll take the responsibility. I've been quite ignorant. Like, so with the guests that we had in the past, you know, we had this thing, we just start rolling straight away. Like, we've been a bit better just getting people to introduce themselves. But I think for us sometimes, you know, the audience, we always go, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, who am I listening to? And I think in a proud way, I think when you tell people who you are and what you do, I think that's going to have more, you know, more weight or whatever. Even though that's not what after, we already know you're an amazing individual regardless. But
you see?
Huh?
You see?
Yeah, he's lit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I try to be.
What do you do?
I try to be.
Talk to me.
Thanks.
Tell your people, what do you do? Sorry. I don't. Guys, this is the first time I've met Johnny here. He's going to give us a fantastic insight about his life.
Thank you. Johnny Wong, 38.
I was about to say 30, bro. Because you just said 30 not long ago.
I'm 38. I've gained a year. I'm 38. And I'm an architect and a dad of two. Mm. So I've got a 5-year-old boy and a 1.5-year-old girl. And that's a very important part of my my outlook on things. I'm an architect. I run a company with 4 other partners. We're 46 people, and right now we've just moved office into Charlotte Street. We're in a really good, what someone described earlier last week, we're in a purple patch. Purple patch in sports is if you're in a purple patch, you give them the ball and they're going to score.
Mm.
We're in that zone right now where we seem to have got this momentum, but actually it's been a very steady growth, and it's based on very fundamental things which I talked about earlier, which is the idea, the concept. And I'd say that's my brain. It's I'm good at kind of problem solving and thinking. So complex, like taking complex things and being able to navigate it into something useful.
Mm.
I think that's probably the easiest way of describing myself. And I care a lot about people and I care about the world.
Lovely.
That's probably the simplest way to describe myself.
Yeah. What's the one thing that people should know about you?
Good question. I don't know. My friends would say I've got massive knees.
You have massive knees.
Yeah, my knees are very big. Hello. Yeah. I don't know if you can tell. But
probably not bigger than mine, but no, I'm joking.
What is this on the podcast when I just deliberating over knees?
My knees are massive. Why, thank you.
You should do Muay Thai, man. I don't know if you ever considered Muay Thai.
Yeah, I did a bit of, I say I did a bit. My flatmates at the time, we did a bit of kickboxing because we love UFC.
Yeah. Got put the knees to use, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That's cool.
But then there was once we just... when we were drinking and we practiced kicking without any pads on, it actually really hurts.
That's not good at there. It's just
damage. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Yeah.
If you could describe yourself as any animal, what would it be?
It would be the one of those ones that
one of those animals.
One of those ones that's kind of looks out for the pack.
I'd wolf. Say.
Yeah, but more cuddly.
Wolves are cuddly. I've been watching, for some reason, the YouTube algorithm just got me recently. There's a lady that owns a wolf in America, and she gives the whole background of, like, how different is it to have a wolf dog compared to just a normal dogs and...
A wolf dog?
Yeah.
Brother.
Yeah, but she says apparently it's difficult. She can't, like, leave... I think it's a female. Yeah, she can't leave a... Like, just, yeah, just hard. She said it's hard to work. So she's doing the research for
it's
us.
Crazy.
Yeah. I want to keep a fox at home, though, but that's a different story.
What?
I'd love to have a fox.
Apparently, if you take a fox out of the wild, after a while, their tails curl up or something, and that's
like a pig.
They become domesticated, yeah.
This guy,
must like a pig.
I'd say that's, again, so that's the thing with under different modes. So under stress, for example, I'm good at taking a situation, making decisions and leading it. But under a relaxed state, I don't need to do that. I'm quite happy just following someone else.
Just to be
chilling.
But were you like the guy at uni that was doing work last minute?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me. Did you see that, huh?
That was me.
Yeah. See me under stress. I don't exist. I evaporate from this universe.
Brother.
Yeah, that's me under stress. Like, basically, there's no Leo after. Once I'm stressed, I don't exist. I'm not, you know what, I'm not usually stressed, but like, that's a joke, obviously. But
I get stressed on an occasion. Yeah. On an occasion. And when I get stressed, my go-to is... to just take a second, I'll take everything in, and then I will come out fighting with fire. Doesn't matter what it is.
Stress can be good.
Doesn't matter what it is.
If you can,
but you'll never see it on me. By the way, you'll never ever see it on me.
Well, just right now.
If you can grab it and then use it to focus, or use it like that, then stress can be very useful. Mm. It's when stress becomes overwhelming and people start.
Yeah. Well. My favorite energy wasn't stress, but anger. Like, I miss anger so much. Like, I'm to the point where I feel like I'm going to talk about this. I feel like crying because I need anger back. Like, honestly, I don't get angry. I think, like, my whole goal in life has been, like, get rid of anger, work on anger, whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing is, anger for me has been so pivotal in making changes in life. Like, because I used it as a good energy. I used it as something that will, like, help me train, do this. And now because I'm like so concerned, I understand people, I deal with things in a different way. I don't get stressed. I do get stressed sometimes, but like, I don't get angry.
What are your triggers?
My triggers?
Yeah, what makes you angry?
That's the thing, I got rid of triggers. The one thing that annoys me is like if I'm ever walking for like Westfield and there's bare people in front of me and they're walking slow. Bro, but it doesn't get me angry, just frustration.
That's just annoying, yeah.
Yeah, it's just annoying. I don't really get angry. Like I haven't been angry for like a year now or something. And even then before that, it was just like every like 6 months, like once in a blue moon. So it's like, to me, like, I'm being genuinely honest, like it's annoying. Like, I actually want to be angry and I can't. Maybe there's some kind of blockage or something, I don't know. But just on a stress thing, so when I get stressed, what helps me is I remember who I am and then I'm not stressed any
man
longer.
Said the inner
yeah
man is, yeah
I've literally this week I was in the office, I was doing some work, and I was stressed because, and that's how funny, anxiety just lives in, it's not a real thing, right? It's just, the only way it exists if I keep thinking about wanting to do.
That's feeling true. It.
Yeah. That's true. Yes, and you know some people that have anxiety and they struggle to sleep? The reason being is because they go on their phone and they'd be like, oh, I've got 5 hours. And they start thinking about the 5 hours of sleep they got. The next thing they know, they've got 4:50. Then it's just basically, essentially, they'll just keep doing the same process. So the only way to just focus on something different. But so I was in the office and I was getting stressed, and then I remembered who I was. I was like, actually, it doesn't matter if I'm stressed or not, I'm still gonna do this. It doesn't matter if I think that I've got so much to do, that's not gonna change. So why don't I just go through in a normal motion, just be in a good state and just carry on.
Yeah,
I hear it. Certain points I'm the same with the anger thing. I'd say I'm the same with anger. I get minutely angry, but never properly angry.
Like lose it.
There's, I think the last time I lost it was maybe years ago. Mm. And that was due to a stupid violation. But aside from that, it's like I'll give people my fuse.
Yeah.
They'll light it, but they'll never really know how much there is to light. they'll be there for time.
I love the fact they say you give the fuse though, you hand it over. Yeah. It's like hold the fuse. That just
quite a good way of getting to. I mean, do you guys drink, for example?
Yeah.
But like when someone's drunk, sometimes that's actually what they really like. And so if someone's a really bad drunk, then you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I used to be a bad drunk when I was younger. So all the self, well, why are you laughing? What did I?
Because you saying that, it just sparked a few things, man.
Why? Oh, yeah.
Wait, what?
I think I know. Yeah, I just remembered something as well. Yeah. I remember the story still.
Sure you do.
I remember. Nah, I'll tell you after.
For me, it's I'm quite jovial when I'm intoxicated. Quite light to get where speaking, laughing, having a bit of a bubble, and then. I must have gone to see my little sister at a time when she was intoxicated.
Yeah.
And I was intoxicated. And we were like, yo. And I thought it was a mad vibe. And then I spoke to her after about it. She was like, yeah, you get a little bit stabby when you're drunk. I said, what do you mean? She's like, the overprotective you comes out.
Mm.
And it's like, I said, whoa, okay, well, at least you've spoken to me about it.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm around her and I'm like had a drink or two, just let her do her thing, man. She's grown now. I'm grown now. Both adults. And I guess as she was my little sister, instinctively, the family element came out. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I think a good change is sister, obviously you do you, but like straight away, see how important language is. Like there'll be a difference straight away if you go, that's my sister, rather than little sister. Because as long as you keep holding her, you know, she's your little sister, then you're going to keep seeing her like that.
Like, my biggest sister, I don't ever see her in the same light.
Mm. Because she's your bigger sister.
Yeah.
Well, if they were both sisters, rather than one's bigger, one's little. But I'm just saying, bro.
It's facts, though. It's true.
I'm just saying. So when I look at things differently, the things I look at change and that. So it's just, you get me? You know what I'm saying? It's one of those ones. But, yeah, all right, man. Do you know what's interesting? We're doing the intro at the end, innit? It's nice. I like it. So anyone that stayed tuned in till this point, well done to you. I've got one more question before we start.
I've got a question for you first.
Wrapping it up. Okay, cool.
What animal would you say you are?
What animal? You didn't really give your...
He did.
Well, kind of. So I'd say, wolf in when it's needed.
Okay, wait, let me pause you, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to say your overarching you on an average day. So whether your average day consists of you being at work all the time or whether your average day consists of you being in the house with family more so, the overarching you.
Yeah, then I'd have to say wolf because like at home I'm like the dad. Mm-mm. In the office I'm like looking after the office and I look out for my team. So I'd say the one that's looking out for everyone, so probably the wolf, isn't it?
Protector.
But the one that I want to be is more like a panda.
Nice.
I get that. Chilled, cuddly, everyone come here.
Yeah, I get that.
Group hug.
Good vibes.
You can't do that anymore in the office.
Yeah. You can.
I still hug all my guys. Come on. You know I love you a lot.
you can, but that's a different conversation.
For me?
Yeah.
I say an elephant. Yeah, I say an elephant because, you're finished in the brain, bro. Now, the reason I say an elephant is, bro, that was finished.
This is why Aladdin doesn't mic up, and then
this is why you don't.
And then the audience can't hear him, but he's saying wild, crazy things. Because of the long,
you're finished.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you did say that.
Yeah, I would say an elephant. The reason I would say an elephant is more so because I just try to instill wisdom where I go to people in little chunks. Try to, anyway.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that.
And I'm quite a force to be reckoned with. So if I don't want to move, I just don't. you can't make me do anything I don't want to do. Like, and I'm not going to fight you for it. It's just not happening.
Yeah, did you get it? I like that.
Sorry, yeah. I'd say that's me.
Mm.
Yeah, also in a sense where I'm the protector. So.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be here for years to come.
Mm.
Yeah. I'd say that's me.
I wonder, do you know what? I'm just sitting there and I'm like, since I've been thinking about this since this morning, but I just wonder what the 1,000th episode of this looks like.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're about to hit 100, but I wonder what the 1,000, I'm not too bothered about the 200. Those are nice, like 200, 300, but I'm like, what does the 1,000th episode look like?
Yeah.
That's crazy. What episode is this? This is 97.
Yeah, 97.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder if Wolf is right, because I'm not vicious. Maybe it's more like a...
Wolves are not vicious.
They are, bro.
No, the thing about wolves, if you study wolves, like, they don't necessarily attack people unless you attack them. Mm. So wolves are protective. It's like, you know, it says they're protective. So wolves ain't going to come and just attack you out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like, if you then go and try to do something, or what, then that's the only time they get vicious. So.
Mm. I wonder if something like a whale is more appropriate. Because whales are similar to what you said about the elephant.
Whales are killers, you know. Like, they kill a lot of...
Yeah, but they're also calm. They're protective. Yeah. They look out for each other. But they're much calmer. Whereas wolves inherently are, like, I wouldn't say I'm like...
You know a wolf.
Yeah. I
but it's more aggressive right traits. Yeah. Even though they can be quite chill and quite tame at times. But yeah, you know them more by their aggressive traits.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't say people are intimidated by me in a way that they would be a wolf. Whereas a whale is like, it's a force to be reckoned with, but it's like, it's a thing, but it's not like vicious.
It depends though, like it depends how you look at intimidation, right? Like, if you measure intimidation in a different way, they might be intimidated by you, so.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, just in a different way.
Yeah. How about you?
So my real answer is that I don't think there's an animal I can relate to or an animal that can describe me, but for the sake of... Because I used to do this back in the day and I'd be very stubborn with it. But for the sake of just going with the flow and adding something there, I think I'd probably go for the lion. Yeah.
Lion. Yeah. Leo the lion. Of course.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, not even... I don't think lions are that vicious anyways, but just in a way of like... Just attacking life. Just... You know what I'm saying? Just going for it. In my own lane, sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess no one would ever describe themselves as a reptile of any sort, would they?
Yeah. I know a guy that I would definitely describe as a chameleon.
Okay, chameleon, that's a good one, yeah.
Chameleon is a good one, yeah.
I know a guy that I would definitely...
You ever read the psychopath test?
No. You know a lot about these tests, innit?
I bought it. Yes, it's a very good book. John Ronson, but I mean, his style of writing, he's a journalist, but it's called Gonzo Journalism. So when you read it, you're experiencing it as he did, researching it. But in the old days, they used to, like, the only psychopaths they knew of were ones that they'd caught for murdering people. So at the time, psychopaths were just murderers or people who just didn't feel. But and in the old days as well, you could test and physically know who a psychopath was because you gave them a strong enough electric shock. And if they enjoyed it, they're a psychopath. Yeah. Basically along those lines. But you're not allowed to do that anymore.
Do you know where you find them now? In the banks.
Exactly. Now they've realised that actually there's a high percentage of people. So the test is like, there's a list of like 20 questions. And it's not one. It's not a yes or no. It's a scale.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a lot of these characteristics suit some of our industries.
Like, we've got some people in the government, some people in the banks. Yeah. We've got psychopaths there, man. Yeah.
This is why the world is where it's at.
And that's what I mean. Like, for me, I wouldn't say Wolf is right because actually, you know, I'm not vicious enough in the professional world either to like really be like a millionaire. You know, a lot of us aren't millionaires or are going to be millionaires because we're not vicious enough. We're not cutthroat enough.
Mm.
Like, it feels like you need to be much more hard in order to get there. Not necessarily, but...
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Like, I can make hard decisions, but not when it's like, but I'm always a bit more empathetic towards what I'm with the outcome of it.
Mm.
And actually, if I weren't, then I'd probably be wealthier.
Yeah.
wealth is the wrong word.
Do you know what's interesting? So I've got two more questions. Should I
go first?
Yeah, I do the last one.
Sure.
And also, like, I think it's called Beyond the Surface, but I feel like we're just scratching the surface in this conversation. So it's not, I think it's a great start though. So at some point we do need to, like, you know, arrange another one. maybe next year sometime, midway through or whatnot.
I'm not sure if it was focused enough in any direction.
No. But that's the thing. That's us, right? So like, it's not for you to, you know, like however we navigate this, then you know. Yeah. But we free flow anyways.
Yeah.
But it's been an incredible start. So.
Enjoyed it for sure.
Yeah, no, it's been really good. I think for us as well, I'll speak on behalf of you. I think for us, the goal is also meeting people and just having those kind of conversations, not just on camera, but also off camera. Like, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Like, we didn't even realise when we first started, because we were literally just speaking.
Yeah. And I could literally spend another 3 hours here. So, so one of the other questions as well that we actually have part of the intro is, like, how do you get your feeling of importance?
Importance. Interesting question. I don't know, actually. I mean, so in my industry, for example, I have to go to lots of events and networking. When I was more junior, I'd go to these places and I'd have to just go to people and start talking to them. No one knew who I was. And also, I do tend to look a bit younger, so people often assume I'm junior.
Mm.
And right now, when I go to events, people are coming to me. And I don't know if that's just because I'm a director of a company or whether it's because they... But actually, I've kind of formed a network now, people who know me as well.
Oh, they want something. But yeah, that's...
Well, yeah, but I think...
could be knowledge.
I think what's... not necessarily importance, but what I enjoy is when... especially when you start talking to someone, at the beginning, you kind of... They're kind of eyeing up to decide whether it's worth talking and they actually start enjoying the conversation. It becomes, it just gets beyond just, here's this is what I do, this is what you do.
Yeah.
And so I guess when you say importance, it goes back to kind of that test, extrovert, introvert, you know, what charges you. And I bounce off connecting with people and situations. And I think whereas the introvert will often, well, again, it's not one or the other, but introverts often kind of recharge on their own.
Yeah, selfish.
Not necessarily selfish, but they
wow.
They need they sometimes they can find lots of other people a bit draining, and actually their way of recharging is to be on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that too, but at the same time I also will come back from lots of people and have charged from that in a way. Mm. But that's not necessarily important. That's just what makes me feel good.
Again, I had one of my boys do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had like a party where we just went away for a few days. And we were all staying in this villa. A lot of us, maybe 25 of us in total. And my boy, he told me beforehand, he's like, bro, gonna be very honest with you, I'm not this sort of extroverted person, quite introverted. So every now and then, if you don't see me, don't worry about me. I'm cool. And I just catch him in his room, just cheesing for a little bit, just relaxing, just chilling out. Might be taking a nap or watching something on his phone. But I said, yeah, man, just here relaxing. I would obviously not pop in, but like, you cool? Yeah, I'm cool, bro. No stress, leave him to do his business.
Yeah.
Leave, man. Yeah, some people charge their social batteries in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just happens to be his.
Yes.
And I guess on the back of that, then the kind of importance thing is, so if people specifically want me to be in a situation, that feels good to me. And it's not just because of my position or profession or whatever. It's just, actually, we want you to be there.
Mm.
And that feels good, right? Because it's for whatever reason.
When it's genuine and authentic. Yeah.
It's a nice feeling, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, shout out to all the selfish introverts. I appreciate you.
You can ask the second question as well, my bro.
Second one?
Yeah.
What, the promotion thing?
Yeah.
So you're going to ask the last one?
Sure, seven million.
Yeah, I don't know what billion written now, but according to the stats. But yeah, just before that, anything you'd like to promote, and I guess it comes in two folds. The first one is something that's, you know, personal, like it can be like a book or I don't know, a quote, or maybe someone else is doing something that you really enjoy. So anything you want to promote in that aspect, and then anything you want to promote, like professionally, I don't know, maybe it might be the work that you do or anything along those lines?
The first one is simply an answer. Like, there was a really good interview with President Obama recently, and at the end they said, what's one bit of advice you'd give to young people? And he said, it's really simple, is learn how to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone's good at coming up like with problems, this, that, you don't learn something until you do it, and and it's not perfect, but you've figured it out and you've got it done. And I think when we talked at the beginning about the kind of attitude change and generational change, and kind of transactional ways of dealing with things, you know, that's all part of it. And actually, once you've learned how to get something done, you then you learn from that. And yeah, so it was a really good, simple bit of advice that Obama gave. I think it's really valuable.
Definitely.
Beyond that, I don't know. It's just keeping an open mind to everything. You know, like, even say things like, they now think, for example, that human brains, the reason why our brains are different or have so evolved is because actually primitive man started eating magic mushrooms. They found psychobilin in the stomachs, in like the stomachs of these fossil primitive people. And they think that it was that that expanded the consciousness. You know, universe you talk about, it does something conscious. And then there's lots of research now about how like the brain is like rivers. Once it's found its bed, its root, it kind of sticks to it. And often, say, people with depression, it's because they can't get out of that bed. And they've now done, they're testing it in the UK now as well, but the mushrooms will basically flood the whole thing. And if you flood it enough times, it forms new roots that could skip the bad thoughts and get to the good parts. And so I guess that's, you can always change. You can always change your outlook, your way of thinking. Some people, like, straight away they see something and they get stressed or they think negatively. You can retrain yourself to not be to not think negatively, to not think the worst. So I think I'm not necessarily saying take magic mushrooms. I'm just saying you can retrain your brain, and you should always be trying to learn, always be trying to grow, and perspective. I mean, that whole thing you're saying of living abroad, it's important to have perspective, both from my sense, it was more humbling. You know, actually, I'm in a very good position in the world. And when in that situation, and you know, the taxi driver's not wanting to pick me up, it's annoying, but actually, relative to other people, at least the reality of some of what they thought I was I can't afford to go somewhere. Well, and actually, that's the reality of a lot of people. They couldn't afford to get taxis. So actually, perspective is important.
But also, it helps you build empathy on that.
Well, that's quite dope, man. That's quite dope. I even wanted to touch upon a point that you made earlier, because all of this humble outlooking that you've got came from you reverse engineering your viewpoints. And I just think that that as well is quite smart, because you said it was for work originally, and you're like, you started looking at the problem from the other side for work. I just think that that's so smart to do, man. Just so smart to do. You have a problem, don't look at it from your perspective, see how the other person is viewing this problem, and that will give you a better way to sort of combat it, man.
There's a saying, replace the word problem with opportunity. So like, I have this opportunity. So if someone's got a big drinking problem, they say, I got a big drinking opportunity. No, but usually, just in general, that's a good way of looking at problems. But yeah, maybe not with that particular one.
My bank has a big opportunity, serious.
Yeah.
Right, last point.
Sure.
Heavy one, you ready for it? If you can say one thing to 7.8 billion people, talking to that camera over there, that one straight down there,
right,
and deliver exactly what you feel they need to know.
Oh, wow, that's a big one on the spot.
Just have a little think about it. In the meantime, I'm just gonna be.
We got some music.
Yep. It's probably a bit higher because that was.
I think we're an 8 right now, you know, but I'm not sure. I don't know. Who really knows?
It's true. Who actually really knows? Anyway, that's what I typed in on Google.
Yeah.
How many people in the world? Said 7.888 billion, but that was also from 2021. So.
Oh yeah, now we're definitely. But
yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't have to say it succinctly because I haven't thought about this long enough. But it's always to challenge your perspective on things, and I think that applies to a lot of politics right now. We see it across the world. Everything's too black and white, and actually there's always a middle, and also there's always something else going on that, like, that you gotta look for the news that they're not telling you.
I know about those ones there.
Yeah,
yeah,
there's always something else going on.
Yeah, yeah, it's like I used that Taiwan example before when they were saying oh, like, we won't let China, like, invade Taiwan. And that's what America was saying. And then we were, whatever. I looked, done my research, and I think Taiwan is responsible for about 80 or 90% of the chips produced in the world.
Right.
I was like, yeah, that's why you're talking all of this. It's nothing to do with your democracy and this and whatever. Like, it's just, yeah, it's strategical. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what...
Challenge your perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, America in particular is very, like... Children, like, school shooting, and then suddenly it's political. If you say anything about guns, it's like you're either
left Democrat or right, or
and it shouldn't be partisan.
And if you're in the middle, then you have to either be left or right. It's just all these, like, do you know, like, I see that everywhere. I think the left and right thing, that's just, like, at work, there was a thing people start talking about, you're either left or right in work. And I see how the political views are spreading into the wide public.
Well, I read that they discovered that the Democrats in America had spent millions funding the most extreme right nutjobs to try and discredit the right. And the right had been funding the most extreme left wingers to discredit the left. And instead, they've created these movements that, and it's hard to know where it began.
Yeah.
And you've got, and actually, they've become proper movements.
Do you want to hear something interesting? So, ChatGPT, sorry, this is the last point, and we can close it. So, ChatGPT, essentially, so they've done 4 independent tests.
Yeah.
To see if it's biased, like, if in any shape, way, or form. To some things, it was more left. To some things, it was more right. But the conditioning of that AI has basically, essentially, what it came from, I forgot what the term is, from the engineers, but there's a term for it. There's a specific term for people that do that. Learning something. I can't remember what it was. But essentially, there's people that do, obviously, they would, like, essentially create the learning methods for the AI. And because of their viewpoints, the AI's had a biased views on certain things.
Yeah.
I get that.
Which is, it's like, so how much of AI it really is, and how much is it really just shaped by human,
probably, yeah.
It's crazy. It is very crazy. It's like saying the Siri on your phone obviously has to have started somewhere. The membrane of that had to have started somewhere. So how much of that person is really in the Siri is basically you're saying. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, Johnny, nothing but gratitude.
You're
an amazing individual. Do you know what? I think for me, it's heartwarming to meet people like you. It's not often that it happens. So it's good to know that sometimes I'm giving up on humanity, and then I run into someone like you, beautiful, amazing individual, and I'd be, you know what? Faith in humanity restored for 2 days, and then.
Good vibes, calm vibes.
Yeah. We need more of that in life. So
yeah, man, tranquil vibes. Like it,
but yeah.
Yeah. Hope there's some good clips to man. Use. I don't
no,
know.
No, it's not about the clips. Like this, what I said is, it's also about this. You know. So
yeah.